It's been nearly a year since the FBI raided the home, office, and even a bank vault of President Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen. And now, after a judge ordered the release of those search warrants and other documents, we have a much better sense of what investigators were looking for. Since the initial raid, Cohen has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI, tax evasion, and violating campaign finance laws, and is now heading to prison later this spring. He's also publicly broken with President Trump. WNYC's Trump Inc. podcast team, produced with ProPublica, is joining us now. We have WNYC's Andrea Bernstein on Skype. WNYC's Ilya Maritz is here in the studio with me. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Hey.
So, Ilya, what did you guys learn from reviewing these documents that were just released?
Right on the first page, the investigator making the warrant application, their name is redacted, says they're looking for evidence of conspiracy, false bank entries, false statements to a financial institution, wire fraud, bank fraud, and illegal campaign contributions. So by the time they showed up at his door in April of 2018, law enforcement had abundant evidence connecting Michael Cohen with a variety of crimes. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that, we learn here, is because the special counsel, Robert Mueller, had obtained not one but three earlier search warrants for Michael Cohen's email accounts. That was starting in July 2017. Mueller's people eventually passed some of the materials they found to New York federal prosecutors. So by the time this warrant application was made, law enforcement had already spoken with people working at banks where Cohen was a borrower. They were actually surveilling his location through a device known as a triggerfish. It monitored Cohen's cell phone location.
Triggerfish.
It told them the precise hotel room where he was staying. One big takeaway here is that prosecutors in New York, you know, when they showed up, they had a pretty good idea of the kind of crimes they were going to eventually charge Cohen with, many of which centered on false statements to financial institutions.
So, Andrea, walk us through what we learned from the documents about Cohen and the banks that he was doing business with.
So this is a really striking and detailed look at Michael Cohen's finances, and it gives us a much clearer picture of his financial condition during the campaign. So you might remember during his congressional testimony, Cohen releases some documents that show that Donald Trump appeared to be doctoring his net worth when he was applying for loans from a bank, specifically Deutsche Bank. And this indeed is now being looked into by the New York Attorney General, Tish James. But what we see from these Michael Cohen documents is that federal agents seem to believe that Michael Cohen was committing a similar crime, lying about what he was worth to banks. And the numbers are extraordinary. So in April of 2014, Cohen told one bank his net worth was $100 million. So think about this. Last spring, Ilya and I went looking at some of Michael Cohen's haunts before he became Trump's lawyer, and he was working in some pretty run-down stretches of Brighton Beach and Long Island City. And he's making money through taxi cab, representing taxi cab drivers and people injured in car crashes. And then he has $100 million, which is a lot of assets, even if he's lying. So a big open question, still unanswered, is how he amassed so much money. But then step two, Uber happens. And the value of his medallions, which lets you pick up street hails from a yellow cab, plummet. This is when he starts renegotiating bank loans and lying about his debt, which is part of what he pleaded guilty to.
And then, Andrea, as we know, the taxi medallion value went down drastically, as you mentioned. So what kind of financial condition was Michael Cohen in during the presidential campaign?
Bad. I mean, it's clear he was fudging numbers all over the place, so we don't exactly know. But what he says is his value went from $100 million to negative $17 million. By 2016, he's renegotiating his bank loans because he says he can't make the payment. So here he is during the campaign, by the way, just like Paul Manafort, under financial stress while Donald Trump is running for president. Why is this important? Because at the same time, he's negotiating the Trump Tower Moscow deal.
Uh-huh.
And it raises the question, did he personally stand to profit? Did that go to his motive to get that deal done? Was that part of why he was calling the Kremlin to ask for help from a hostile foreign power during the campaign? So we have more to learn about whether Michael Cohen's personal condition had anything to do with his actions during the campaign with the Trump Tower Moscow.
And Ilya, so we have this warrant that was released yesterday, a lot of the information redacted, but what did we learn from it?
A couple strange little things jumped out at me. I'm going to quickly run you through those. One is a very unusual agreement Cohen made to sell his taxi medallions in 2017. Their value had already plummeted. Donald Trump had already become president. See if you can follow this. He found a buyer, but this unnamed party, the name is redacted, agrees to pay Michael Cohen well above market rate for the taxi licenses. And in addition, Cohen doesn't tell his lender that Cohen made some kind of side deal to pay the buyer a one-time cash sum of $3.8 million. Huh. It was strange enough to the lender that they asked, what is going on here? Do you have a side deal? Another thing that jumped out at me comes from another statement he made to a bank back in 2014. He disclosed a $10,000 investment in, quote, overseas entities. We don't know what that is. He did at one time invest in a Ukrainian ethanol company. So perhaps there's a connection. We just don't know.
All right, Andrea, reading the documents that have been released, do you have a sense of where things are going from here for the investigators and for the prosecutors?
Yeah, there's some big hints. So what we know is that Michael Cohen said during his testimony, he talks to prosecutors from the Southern District of New York all the time. The unit that's investigating him is not the financial fraud unit, it's the public corruption unit, the people who got convictions for Dean Skelos and Shelley Silver, the former legislative leaders. So it suggests there's a public corruption angle that we may not yet understand. Also, there are pages and pages of the warrant that was released that are redacted. And these all concern the campaign finance scheme, the payments to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, so far as we can tell. So what this suggests is that when we see these redactions, it means that there's some kind of ongoing investigation that they don't want to jeopardize. So what it looks like this could mean is that when it comes to campaign finance violations and the Donald Trump campaign, prosecutors have more to tell us.
WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, Ilya Marritz, co-hosts of the Trump Inc. podcast. And I understand the next episode will be released tomorrow.
That's right.
And what can we expect?
On the Trump Tower Moscow, many details of that deal.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Richard.